letting people know that they're loved and that they're connected and that they're still a part of a greater whole.
Hey, welcome to the Current Mood podcast. This is your host, Jacqueline Marie. Current Mood is a series exploring self-care techniques, mental models, and core patterns propelling our increasingly digital lives. Through conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, educators, and executives across creative disciplines, I get a chance to learn about things that work for people in their everyday lives. In this episode of Current Mood, I had the honor of having a really deep convo with Mr. Carmack, a good friend of mine and super talented producer. We really go deep into kind of the evolution of being an independent producer and artist coming up on SoundCloud, kind of talk about monetizing your talent and your music. And then we kind of dive into like, who is Mr. Carmack? A lot of people don't really know who Aaron is. He is a very solid and good human, first of all. And secondly, he's an incredibly talented musician, multi-instrumentalist, producer, who cares about his community and specifically about mental health. And he is an advocate for suicide prevention. And we talk a lot about that and how the music industry handles wellness and mental health. So I hope you enjoy the conversation and that you get something out of it. Thanks for tuning in. Who are you?
Who am I? I'm a Bay Area native. I'm born in San Francisco. I'm multicultural. I'm like 6-7 nationalities.
Filipino.
Yeah, I'm Filipino, Irish, Chinese, Hawaiian, Scottish, and Native American.
Really?
Yeah, my mom, both my parents are bi nationalities.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Dual. So, you know, growing up in San Francisco like that, it was like, I don't know, it couldn't have been more like unique of an experience for me, because yeah. I was hanging out with people in the Mission, like Mexicans, you know, Central Americans, South Americans. And then I, you know, hang out with, you know, very, very, very like white neighborhood, yeah. You know, very affluent neighborhoods. And then, you know, it was like right next to each other. Everything was, you know, there was like, I lived one block away from low-income housing, or like the projects, as we called it.
Yeah,
which part
of the city?
I was in the Fillmore. Okay. I grew up on Fillmore Street, Fillmore and Grove Street.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I used to live on Hayes and Fillmore.
I think we...
Did we talk about this?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
When I first moved to San Francisco, I lived on Hayes and Fillmore.
Yeah.
Right at the 21 like, bus. Yeah. Right.
21.
The 21 bus.
You were around the corner. Were you across the street from the halfway house?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. So the house I grew up in is the first house on the Fillmore side of the halfway house.
Crazy.
Literally that entire building we own. And
oh,
like,
shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, well, my parents own.
Yeah.
But
that's the one where there was a crazy flood.
Crazy flood. That was probably like the most damage we ever done to that house ever. But like, because that house predates the 1906 earthquake too.
Oh my God.
And it didn't fall. Like there was no real structural damage. Because Alamo Square, that whole area is a massive fucking rock. It's just straight up like
shit. Full house is on a rock?
Like it's like the foundation is straight up like solid ass rock. It's not like earth or like hello like mud, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
not
yeah, yeah.
Where it was more like it was just more unstable, I guess. But we're built into the rock, so a lot of those houses, if not every single one of those houses, survived that earthquake.
Yeah,
but somehow my dad bought one in the 70s and like wow. Really kept it in the family. And then
that's amazing.
That's crazy. I didn't know we were neighbors. When, what years here? What years were you there?
I moved to San Francisco in 2007 for college. I went to SF State. I think we talked about that.
Yeah. I know you went to State. Yeah. My mom worked.
Oh, really?
50 years.
Of course she did. 50 years?
She was there since like
early 60s,
dude.
Yo.
Like mid-60s.
This all was really making sense because I had the best experience at SF State. And I've met your mom before and I had a great experience with her too.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, she's kind of one that's hard to forget.
Where'd you go to college?
Long Beach State. So I went down south. I came
Wait,
down
is that here. How you met Joe?
Sonny. You know what? We never crossed paths. Like, I never met Joe at Long Beach State.
Oh, shit.
We were corresponding. I didn't know that Selection was on K Beach until after I left for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of, like, eludes me how I could have not seen that. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I was on SoundCloud already.
Yeah.
Like 2009, 2008, like beginning of 2009, maybe.
Yeah.
And I think one of the first things I discovered was fucking Selection, because they were like the first record label to like actually be putting on records like regularly on SoundCloud. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, usually it was just like individual producers or music guys that made the simple beats and put it on. But Selection was a group, it was a collective. And so they were feeding music regularly. It was like,
yeah, it was that consistent output. That's like Joe's
consistent
thing.
Output. Yeah.
Yep. It's true. It works. It definitely works. And it was good.
It was good.
It was also really good.
It was in that time and era. Yes. Because
I fucking miss that era of music.
It was definitely a fucking golden age.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, we're still kind of we're still feeling the effects of all of that, you know?
Yeah.
The change in the way we listen to music. But
how is
but to go back to, all right.
Yeah.
I gotta say it again. Like, I don't understand how I didn't know Joe.
Because
we were talking online and then we were like literally like fucking half a mile away from each other.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
It was really weird.
You didn't know you guys were half a mile away though at the time?
Nah.
Oh, that's so funny. The internet is so funny.
And I left to go, and then I left to move to Hawaii right after that.
Oh, okay.
So that was when like I really started to put stuff out on their SoundCloud.
Yeah, for sure. That was definitely like that was your thing. And then you started to like really going ham on Bandcamp.
Yeah, Bandcamp. So it was, well, we were making like 40,000-50,000 plays, just total. And at that time, that was like insane. You know, that was an insane amount of plays.
Yeah.
Now it's like if you get 50,000, no one's like even batting an eye nowadays.
Right. What's a lot of plays now on SoundCloud?
To me, if you're getting at least like 10,000 a day, or that's pretty good. That's active engagement. You know what I mean? At least 10,000 a day.
Yeah.
That's on the lower rank. You know, if you're like a fucking big ass like rapper or like something, then you'll probably, or like Skrillex or something.
Yeah.
You're getting at least 10,000 a day or on one track, you know? I think I'd notice that.
Yeah.
But like back then we were getting like 150,000 a day. Like
it was wild.
200,000. I think Selection was breaking 200,000 a day. And Kacher probably broke like 250,000 a day. You know what I mean? Like he was getting, it was like when everyone was on SoundCloud and like we, you know.
It was definitely a critical mass on SoundCloud at that time.
Yeah. Critical mass. It was great. But you know.
So how did you turn that? How did you actually turn that into your business or your career?
All right. So Bandcamp was like.
All right. So.
Bandcamp was number one. Like it was before I even knew how to pay taxes, you know, like it was like I was raking in money because every play, basically you could set every, you know, every play was an impression on the song on SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put if you advertise that you could actually download the song, there's no reason why some of those people would come and play and pay, you know? Nowadays, it's like everyone does it now. Like, you have to, that's how you make money, you know? It's established. But back then, like, it usually, like, people were using SoundCloud as just like an edit tool. Like, you were just seeing the people edit music.
Yeah.
So sick. It was more about like the community than like as a jump off point. You know what I mean? Like, totally. Which is fine. It's all good. You know, it's all good. It's the natural progression of things. Mm-hmm. It's when things get too big, you know? And then.
You think it got too big?
I mean, most things do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they scale up and then like, where do you stop?
Exactly.
Yeah. The
capitalist method doesn't allow for you to just keep it small. You know what I mean?
Did things change for you when they kind of started coming down with the labels and like the warnings and all that stuff with the copyright sample stuff?
I mean, not really, because at that point I just didn't even care. Because
I ain't like, give a shit.
Like I already had my own gripes with SoundCloud. As we went along in the years, you know, like I started, like they changed it a lot and they didn't up their quality. Like their quality is really bad. And like, you know, all respect to SoundCloud. I love,
for sure.
Bad mouth SoundCloud, but like,
these are just things you
tell them, you know, it's really, and then there's incessant ads now. Like I get it, you know, but like,
it changed.
It's like, it's almost like none of the original people are there. Maybe. I don't know. But, but at the same time, it's like they've afforded me with like a singular way to actually be where I am now.
Right.
Like SoundCloud, it would have been a completely different story. Totally. Because Bandcamp operates on purely a storefront kind of style.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's no real community within Bandcamp other than maybe, you know, with very like core, like intense Bandcamp motherfuckers, you know, like
which there are plenty of.
Like the fucking super Bandcamp dudes.
Those are like super fans. Those are people that really support by merch. Like
You can buy merch. You can do it's a storefront, you know, put your projects on there. But that mixed with SoundCloud was like a massive like 1-2 punch for any budding artist, because you could get the immediate eyes with SoundCloud if your track was good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It would propagate through reposts.
Right. Oh yeah, the reposts. That was a game changer.
It was like a propagation. It was like if someone big reposted your shit, automatically you would get like 1,000 plays. At least 10,000.
You know what was crazy is like, I mean, like we'd look at the analytics of SoundCloud. That was another amazing part of SoundCloud for on the back end, is like you could really target your community and really create the messaging that speaking to people and seeing like kind of what worked and what didn't work. And then that's how we like build a newsletter, and like, you know, it's SoundCloud definitely create a lot of like tools to help people grow.
Yeah. I mean, they were the blueprint to a lot of current. SoundCloud was probably responsible for an entire rewrite of what copyright law is, property law in music, you know. It was complete rewrite, you know, because it didn't matter that the business heads were getting confused and upset. You know, the art was like, it was literally like shining through, you know what I mean? Way to get people the access to just all sorts of different sounds was just like blazing through. So it was, you know.
Who are like two memorable artists you found on SoundCloud, or like two songs that you just like, thanks SoundCloud?
I always liked this guy named Vanilla. I mean, I'm not sure if he's still making music, but like when you talk about old SoundCloud, I think about two guys. I think about this guy Illustrate and this other guy named Vanilla. And I'm not sure if they even fucking make music yet.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to them in over 10 years. Oh, but like,
Vanilla and Illustrate? Okay.
Yeah, but like they were kind of, they were instrumental in me staying on because it, like, we just, they were just internet homies that made music regularly. Yeah. So we would, I would send them my tracks and they would send me theirs. And it would be kind of like a, and I was like, this is tight. I can have a conversation with people that I don't know that aren't in my like producer circle.
Right.
I mean, that are feeding me ideas that they just made that day or that they made yesterday, you know? And that's what got me to use SoundCloud was because it was like the community was helping me kind of find more diversity in my own music.
Yeah, for sure.
But then like at least with SoundCloud too, like, you know, K-Tronada obviously was massive, you know, a huge
That Tedra Moses, like,
yeah,
that's the one that sticks out.
you can't really talk about like SoundCloud without him, you know what I mean? And like it's really like, it really helped everyone just kind of see how far how far you can go with this platform too, you know?
Yeah, and with a really unique sound.
Yeah, yes, with just incredible tunes and incredible ideas and incredible flips and original music. Like, you know, he's an all-around fucking great dude too. Like,
solid human.
But that's what it was. It wasn't like some fucking canned dude that came up the ranks and, you know, like came up the ranks and, you know, wherever else, like, you know, it was like we all watched him progress. And that's my point. You know what I mean? And like
Tredamus, case, what was his original name?
Tredamus, yeah.
Tredamus, yeah.
And then it dropped to Ketra.
Ketra, yeah.
And then it went, I guess, I don't know what the order was, but it was definitely Ketradamus at the beginning.
Yeah.
But he was also like me, he was finding artists on SoundCloud to work with, you know what I mean? Like it was like, it's almost as if he probably created his whole Montreal crew.
Word.
Through SoundCloud. Maybe he, you know, he already knew High Classified and all, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Brother Lou, you know, but it's like everyone in that community came together via SoundCloud as well. You know what I mean? Because it was the ability to fucking share music within the scene as well. Actually, that's how Selection started too. I wasn't where fucking even Matt Decent found like a solid, like, it wasn't a blog anymore. It was like a fucking solid group of people that all shared.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing music?
As I grow older, I want my teaching credential.
Oh, that's hell yeah. You'd be such a good teacher.
I'd love to teach like kids or at least do some like specialist work or like something where we can like, you know, help, you know, youth somehow. What else? I've done like seminars and like talks and like, I've done like 3-day kind of like beat workshops and stuff. I think it definitely benefited being in the LA area at that time as well. Like you were here, like we all were here.
Yeah, the being in the city was important.
Yeah, sure. It was like the LA, the Los Angeles local heads and like the already bred like Mad Lib, like beat culture.
For sure. Like the,
it's coming to head.
Cinema culture. And.
Yeah.
Low end. Low end. Yeah. Your ears were just like bleeding afterwards.
Seriously. Like it was unforgettable sets.
For real.
My first show was at Low End.
Wow.
My first ever paid show was at Low End.
Is that when you played out of iTunes or was that at a festival?
Yes. And I was blacked out drunk and I played at I did not play on iTunes at a festival. Wait, no, I did. I
you
played
did.
At Coachella. At Coachella, I played an all iTunes playlist set.
Tear it up, bro. Tear it up.
It was at like fucking, it was at noon.
It was at, yeah, oh, was at noon? Oh,
okay. It was at noon. I was like sound check, you know? That's the only time I played outdoor theater. The biggest fucking, is literally the biggest stage Coachella offers. At least like the most expansive. Like that's where, yeah, like, that's where like Travis Scott played. That's where like all the fucking massive artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I played there at like noon.
was anyone there?
Nesta. There was probably like 300 people there, you know?
Hey, that's fucking cool. You're outside. You're at a figure at Coachella.
Burning. People burning outside. It was like dead noon.
Oh, like roasting already.
Yeah. It was hot.
I miss that California sun. I mean, let me tell you.
Yeah. Come back.
No? I am. I'm coming back next week.
Oh shit. Okay.
It's my mom's 60th birthday. She doesn't know I'm coming. I'm just gonna show up.
Hey, there you go.
Well, like outside with a mask and like a cake, but you know, I'll still be there.
Oh well, yeah. My parents are like 73, 74.
72. Oh wow. Yeah.
Yeah. They had me when they were pretty old.
Did they? Do you have siblings?
I have an older sister. We're 7 years apart, I believe.
Oh, okay. Where does she live? Hawaii?
She lives in Hawaii. Okay. Yeah. And she was actually responsible for getting my ass in gear when I was like fucking up in college.
Hell yeah. She's that kind of sister.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was like, if you're going to come out here and bum my car, like I basically asked her because I couldn't afford to live in LA anymore.
Yeah.
Like, yo, can I move to Hawaii? I'll totally get a job. Like, I'll totally get my shit together.
Yeah.
She was like, you better. And I crashed on her couch for a couple months. And then I actually got her evicted, which was fucked.
Oh, no. What the hell?
Yeah. All the roommates started complaining about me because I was just in the house. You know what I mean? And I was like finding a job.
But did you get your shit together?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here.
Or no, like in that moment where she told you to get your shit together. Yeah.
It was actually an interesting moment when I got fired because it was my third. I was trying to tack on a third job. Like I had two part-time jobs because nobody wanted to give me a full-time job. And I was like, just give me a fucking I'll work for salary. Just give me, but nobody wanted to pay me like a full-time job rate. And then, yeah. Also, I was working at a restaurant too, so that's kind of, you know, part-time. But yeah. I tried to tack on a third part-time job. This was when like I was just starting to get my shit on Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm.
Like me and my sister had just got a new place to live, like right at, because we got evicted like 2-3 months after I moved there. Like the roommates were not. But anyways, basically, I got hired to work at a music shop on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And by Friday, I got fired.
Yo, crazy how life works out.
Yeah. And I was like fucking bawling my eyes out because I remember getting fired for the first. It was the first time I ever got fired.
Oh, yeah. That's things.
I was like 22, 21 years old.
Yeah.
I was just like, dude, I'm fucking barely.
Yeah.
Walked all the way home, tail between my legs.
Aww.
And then I was just like, you know what? I make enough with two jobs. I'm just going to fucking go full force with this whole concept that, you know, the SoundCloud was steadily rising.
Yep.
And I just needed a way to monetize that. You know what I mean? And Bandcamp takes like fucking 15%, you know, 10%.
Yeah.
You're pocketing 85% of the profits of anything you sell on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer, you know?
Right.
Especially in that time, you know? If you can get fucking $500 off that shit.
That's a lot of money back then.
Yeah, like, I would take anything at that point, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But part of why they fired me was because I was, like, going to work at 8:30 a.m., ending at noon, and then going to another job and ending at 6, and then going to the restaurant job from 7 to midnight.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I was like literally killing myself, you know?
Oh.
And then I would write music afterwards, you know?
Dude, when you're 21, 22, you can do that shit.
I know. I
now a hangover lasts like 3 days.
Man, you're talking about 2 days ago, bro.
Oh man.
I know. I don't know. I definitely felt my 21 and 22 years, you know, that area was like a crazy crash course and just like learning how to just go balls to the wall, you know? Because that's what's necessary for project finishing. Like if you need to finish like music or anything like major.
Tell me about it.
Last like week, like it's just like that feeling where you're just like, just trying to hang on to just every little aspect of that project before you finish.
How do you know you're done?
So one of my homies says once I get sick of it, like once you get sick of the music that you're working on, then it's done. Like okay. That is like a precise moment when you're sick of hearing a song.
Like there is like, for sure.
It's like it's like an exact, like it's like a pin drop of time where you're just like, you know what? I'm not listening to this anymore. At least with a producer, like it's like, cause you're just listening to parts over and over again.
Over and over and over and over.
And sometimes the process lasts years. Like I've had songs that.
Yeah.
On for years
and yeah,
I never got sick of it.
I never get sick of Webby Flow. I think I told you that last time.
Ooh, I love it. I love how crazy it's mixed. It's like
who mixed it?
Oh dude, you know, I haven't talked to this guy in years, but his name eludes me.
Yeah.
But he was Isaiah's right hand man in that studio that those Tunji brought me in. Shout out Tunji. He personally brought me to Carson when they were still working like out of like this fucking it was beautiful. Like it was like a what is that called at the end of the street? It's like a
cul-de-sac?
Cul-de-sac, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like all owned by TDE, you know?
Oh, I mean? Shit. In Carson?
Houses, like all the houses were owned and people were jumping in between. There were studios left and right.
That's amazing.
It was beautiful. And like, I would never seen something like that in my life, you know?
Is that how that album was made? Like in that kind of
environment? Well, Zay was just getting brought out of, I believe, Chattanooga.
Right.
And he was coming out to LA to record. Yeah, it was like this weird, like, it's great music, but it was like this weird, like, major label mix of what? Like big room, like, house with pop and...
Yeah. Well, that was, like, around the time when you could start, like, A&Ring from SoundCloud. Like, that wasn't a possibility before that.
That was crazy. That is a crazy time.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
I remember I took 3 meetings in one day. 3 meetings. And 2 of them were in record labels, and one of them was with Drake's team.
Oh, shit. Like,
2 record label meetings, and then homie from Drake's team. I forget his name.
Jamil?
No. It was like literally Drake's right hand man.
Oh, Future.
Yeah. And we were literally like, I had been talking with people about, like, it was almost like people were less interested about my music and more just trying to pick my brain about what exactly is happening. You know
what I mean? What's happening?
It was like I was talking to them about the current state of what was going on.
Yeah.
And playing music and trying to play music too.
Yeah.
They just kept bringing up the conversation. Like, I talked with, like, somebody who probably doesn't even work there anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. At Capitol and then like one at like UMG and like, what was that? Ah, I forget. See, I don't even think about record labels like this. I really don't. But it's crazy because people were shuffling. It was internally for record labels, like A&Rs were reshuffling. Like turnover rate for A&Rs was so fucking fast. It was like,
It's like trading cards, bro. It's like sports.
It was crazy. I was like talking to people, and then next week I'd call them and be like, I don't work there anymore. And I'm like, what the hell?
Where are you?
Yeah.
It's the same for agents too. No,
something. Yeah. Like I was like, dude, it was crazy.
It's the same for media, for journalists. It's like a high turnover.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But those days were like, it was definitely like, now it's probably, I mean, it probably still is just as crazy.
What's like your current read on the way that the music industry talks about or treats like mental health?
Mental health? It's usually up to the artists. The way I see it is people are just, I mean, at least currently, like with the whole pandemic situation, like everyone's kind of in safe mode right now. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's really kind of breaking out of their own personal insecurities and actually like trying to address certain things that people are going through, you know? Not saying that nobody is, but I feel like children, at least with the greater, the powers that be, you know what I mean? I feel like it's like, there's a lot of work to be done, you know what I mean? In sort of, you know, re-energizing the industry and like recultivating like creativity outside of, you know, obviously being, you know, safe and socially distant and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's still like work to be done, like opening up conversations, you know, like making it known that, you know, things aren't like they used to be, but like on a broader scale, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not just have a conversation with one other person, you know, which is fine, but it's like, there's no, like my home, like, what was
that? I was gonna say, there's really, there's, you're right. There's no like governing body in the industry.
No. That's why it's always been
like therapists or something, some kind of group. I mean, there's unions and those kinds of groups, but I don't really know many groups or even like brands or communities that are really taking a stance for mental health.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, at least with my thing, you know, the event on Saturday, I really want to just kind of open up a conversation. That's all I'm really trying to do.
Like,
what's the event? Oh, it's called You Are Not Alone. Basically all of these, mental health groups and organizations and stuff, suicide prevention foundations, they all share the same sentiment that the most effective way to have someone either avoid suicide or avoid like a depression or a manic depressive, you know, like a episode where you're just intense, severe, like panic attack, like depression, you know, like,
yeah.
Like the way to do that is just to let them know that they're not alone. Like, you know, obviously not in the immediate, you know, there's probably more that you can do, but I think the same sentiment is shared with all of these foundations is that just letting people know that they're loved and that they're connected and that they're still a part of a greater whole is a huge help in preventing a lot of, you know, people's own, you know, choices that they make, you know?
Right.
Because the mind is a crazy thing. The mind is a powerful thing. And I feel like, you know,
it is crazy.
Yeah. It's literally like, it runs the gamut with as much. I don't know. I didn't even know how to explain it. I can't even begin to explain it, but, you know, to bring it back to what you were saying about how, you know, industries treat mental health, it's like,
yeah,
it's hard to kind of, it's hard to pinpoint to just one thing that people can do.
Right.
All these issues too. You know what I mean? It's hard to say like, oh, these guys are doing one thing, that's cool. Or these guys are doing another thing, that's cool. And just really kind of like narrow it down to just something that everyone can do, you know?
Yeah, like prescribing something is pretty tough because everybody needs something different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it runs the gamut, you know? Like mental health can stem from physical injury. Mental health can stem from any sort of things, you know?
Right.
Emotional injury, you know? Right. Like, to address one, kind of have to address everything, and then use a specialization. You know?
Yeah, like a holistic approach.
Yeah,
yeah. What's like? How were you socialized into like self-care or like your mental and emotional health? Like, how did you grow up to think about that?
I'm like, I'm fucking, you know, multinational, like, you know, is that the way to say it? Multinational? Multinational.
However, whatever you feel is the right thing to say.
Yeah. Multinational,
multiracial? Like, is that what?
Multiracial. I like that. I don't know.
I don't know. It's whatever you identify
with. Yeah, I don't know. I've never tried to identify myself like that. But multiracial, like, guy from San Francisco, you know, like, critical thinking was alternative sources of education. Mm-hmm, was like mm-hmm. a massive thing going on in the 90s.
Yeah. And,
like, out of, you know, the, you know, the love era and like mm-hmm. the golden peace era, mm-hmm. civil rights movement right afterwards. And then like in the 80s was like a crazy wave, like LGBTQ, mm-hmm. like that whole free love era kind of extended itself into the 90s, mm-hmm. where you had all these people that were going in through all their own craziness and, you know, their experiences with this extended period of turmoil and passion and love, mm-hmm. and now they're having kids. So right. they had kids in the late 80s and 90s or mid 80s, even in the early 80s too, like it extends. But like all this whole generation, like my own generation, has this like influx of just alternative modes of just, you know, you had a friend with the parents who are like poets that go up to fucking Alaska and go yell at the fucking mountains or something, or like, you know what I mean? There's the amount of individual and unique uh-huh. upbringing in San Francisco was insane. Like
totally. Yeah. It's alternative lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who had three parents. You know what I mean? And they all living in the house, all in like amorous, you know what I mean? It was like a whole thing.
Okay.
Like, but it was like, hey,
you know? Yeah.
Like probably at a school in the Midwest, he'd be fucking laughed out of town. You know what I mean?
Right. Or worse. And, like,
or worse, you know?
Yeah.
Or worse. So like, it's like the way we were raised to kind of not only accept it, but just kind of feel like it's part of this already woven fabric of my life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because like, I'm beyond just accepting things. You know what I mean? It's sure. like, I don't have to look at you and be like, I accept you for who you are. Like, it's already like a thing.
Yeah.
Like I like, some people have to do that. You know, some sure. people have, like, are you a cool dude? Are you a cool girl? Like, you know, and they, you know, assess you culturally too. You sure. know, they assess you on a cultural level and an upbringing. Like, do we see eye to eye from our foundations? Like,
right.
I don't know, because it was just so crazy growing up in San Francisco at that time. I feel like it, like what you mean by socialized, like,
yeah,
it was like as socialized as it could get.
You like know? It, like talking about your feelings was normal.
Normal. If not, normal. It was just like, it was part of it. It was literally like sit in a circle and like, you know, like a kid would fucking do some dumb shit and like part of it was mediation. So like, I remember wow. like you sit there with both kids and everyone would talk it out and like
yeah.
figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not to say that doesn't happen, but these are things that like give rise to critical thinking, you know, give,
right.
these are the early development stages of critical thinking.
And yeah.
knowing what's right from wrong, ethics too.
Yeah, but, that really resonates with me too, because I, you know, I lived in San Francisco for so long and I had family up there, and it's a total alternative universe in yeah. so many ways, and there's so many interesting perspectives and people, and yeah
and they're still there, although in a lot smaller numbers, you know. Yeah. those people are in their 60s and 70s now, the right. people that kind of gave rise. My mom's worked at the Ethnic Studies Department in San Francisco for 50 years. And it's like,
crazy.
She's just sick of dealing with bureaucracy, because it's like so far removed from the intent and the energy that started that department. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, but she's 70 now. So it's like, I don't give a fuck anymore.
I'm trying to hang out with my family.
Fucking, you know, stay alive as long as I can and, you know, be with my grandkids and shit. So,
yeah.
But so who is it left to? Like, it's kind of people that are there now. They didn't really get that
energy
because they're implanted. They're coming in to San Francisco with the tech boom, you know, all that stuff.
The boom.
The boom. The big boom.
Wow.
I know. So, you know, that's a whole fucking can of worms right there, you know?
Yeah, that's a lot. That's
hours. A lot. Yeah.
So have you had your own personal, I mean, why are you getting behind this kind of movement of creating visibility around healthy minds?
I think there were like a couple of revelations I had last year during the whole COVID shelter in place. You know, we all were, you know, we don't even have to talk too much about what we felt like. We all shared like the same just fear and you know, I know people that are still scared out their fucking minds about this shit, man. And like you know, it's a very current situation that we're just taking it every day. Every day is a new day, you know. But my revelations were, number one was a majority of the people that I met in LA, I've never had like an actual real conversation with. That's one of the biggest, it's very sad. It's honestly incredibly sad, but like,
Yeah.
It was a big revelation was that like a lot of people that I was calling, you know, cause there was a moment where one of our mutual friends here committed suicide. And it got me to call a lot of friends. And I was like, I realized that I've never had this deep of a conversation with anybody that I call. Anybody. Mm-hmm. Maybe one person. But like the majority of the people that I called to reach out and just, you know, share sentiments and share grief. And I was like, bro, like I've known these people for like 6, 7, 8 years since I moved here. And, you know, like you, Jack, like everyone I met at that time, we were all like running around like fucking ants, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I'd see you at clubs. I'd see you, you know, during the day at like, we'd cross meetings, you know?
Yeah.
We'd have our, you know, our couple words, but like, I feel like the majority of those people, like I never really had honest conversations about what people are feeling. And it was magnified and amplified, of course, by all of our, you know, shared emotion and depression because of the pandemic. So,
right.
So obviously, you know, there's that coming into the conversation too, but like every person I talk to, like I talk to for like hours or like an hour, you know what I mean?
Yeah, me too. Pretty much same. I had the same revelation.
Yeah. It was like, bro, I never talked to this person. Because I feel like I had to call this person.
Yeah. And
every time we talk, it's like literally like we just talk for so long. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just this outpouring and like and feeling the need to just speak yourself through. You know, just talk.
Yeah.
See what your own ideas sound like.
that part.
Yeah, because like I, you know. So there was that aspect that was like a really driving factor in why I feel like at least making it known that I'm reaching out is like a necessary thing for me to start this year out, at least, you know?
Yeah. You're looking for more authentic connection.
Yeah. I'm just like, you know, trying to just open up. And like, I don't know. I guess another revelation was that like, I have, my mind is like, my mind feeds on other people. That sounds kind of weird.
I'm like,
mind feeds on other people.
Wait a minute. What character are you?
Fucking science character. No.
Yeah.
No, what I'm trying to say is like my mind operates and needs like social validation, not in like, I need to hear that I'm a cool dude, you know what I mean? But like,
right. You need to like exchange ideas with people.
Talk shit to me, talk shit to me. Like
anything.
Just please. Like, help me work out my ideas with you and we can, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm like, I'm not approaching people and asking, you know, pleading with them to talk to me, but like,
right.
But I feel like there were so many pockets and moments of my time last year that I can't even remember because I was just vegged out. Like I wasn't talking to anyone.
Yeah.
I was sitting on the couch using COVID as an excuse to just not apply myself to anything. You know what I mean? And like,
that's actually, that's okay. Understandable.
Great. No, it was. I'm just saying right now it's over for that for me.
You know? Okay. Yeah. And you started the new year fresh. Like, nah, fuck that.
It was depression, bro. It was depressing. It was depressing for me. And I didn't know it was depressing ultimately because it was just, it required the most minimal of effort, you know, to just kind of get up and, you know.
Yeah.
All my parents every couple, there was weeks where I didn't even talk to my manager. Like they're still mad. Dude. Like there were literal, like I would not pick up my phone for anyone. I'd leave my phone off for weeks because nobody was going out and checking on anyone, you know?
So yeah, that's true. I wonder if anyone else went through that.
I wonder too. Breaking out. I don't know. Like there are people during the pandemic that literally had no contact, no access to anyone because they were like living by themselves.
Yeah.
$400 a month apartment. And yeah. you said it earlier too about your cat, you know, it's like your pet, you know, was responsible for your well-being, man. Like
just, yeah. No, wow. I definitely went through like last year was crazy. I went through so many different emotions every fucking day, it seems like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, dude, I definitely went through spans where I just didn't talk to people. I kind of withdrew and like did not want to be around anybody.
Yep.
And also there's so many people that I just don't talk to anymore. And I really wonder why the fuck did I ever even engage with you in the first place? Time is precious. What is this?
I know. Really. It really made me understand who my real friends are.
For sure. Yeah.
And, you know, we all go through that. I think like every, you know, couple years you do like a friend check.
Yeah, for sure.
So who are my real friends now?
But who's like, going to help me move? Huh?
Yeah. Oh,
that's how you know, bro. That's how you fucking know.
Your real friends help you move.
Yeah. They're the ones that are there that they'll always come through. They'll either help you move. They'll help you unpack. They'll give you a ride. Like some shit.
Yeah.
That's the homies.
Totally true. Yeah. My homie just moved. So he didn't want my help. He was like, don't worry about it.
Oh, that's cute.
It's like, bro, I'm going to come help you. He's like, no, jump.
That's another thing too, that I find myself doing that is like not asking for help or like pretending I don't need help. Not asking for anything. I feel like that's probably part of the message of like the, you are not alone. It's like asking for help is actually tight.
It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to call on someone. Yeah. Like that's another sentiment. That's the other big sentiment that we're trying to, you know, put out there is that like, just call someone, bro. It'll make your day, you know, just by talking to someone.
Who are you trying to get this message out to?
Just if I could get this message out to one person, that would be amazing. You know what I mean? Like, but like, I feel like in the Twitch world, you know, people, you know, that watch my stuff, which are usually in like the beat scene or, you know, the more technical production stuff, like, you know, it's good to put out like an emotional message once in a while that doesn't involve, you know, just, hey, let's just fucking DJ for like
42 hours.
It ends and then I was like, hey, you know what I mean? And another thing is bringing people together with the stream too. It helped me kind of like know what it takes to put together a lineup, you know? Mm. Practice of, you know, getting people on task and like
producing.
I'm juggling like fucking hella people right now and it's like it's cool, it's fun, it feels like I'm back at work. You know, it feels like I'm back to work.
You know? You got a purpose, bro.
Yeah. Actually, one day I got really drunk with my homie, and he straight up just like it was like a month and a half ago. He straight up, because I was producing, I brought my computer to my house, and we got super drunk, and he was like, "What the fuck are you doing? Making beats on your dining table? This shit is embarrassing."
Dang.
Like ripping me, like, "You don't even want to see this. Why are you working at home?" And I was like, the next day I moved all my shit to my studio, literally.
Yeah.
It took that kind of just like shaking up just to be like, all right, like, you know, it's over for just being in my own head, you know?
Oh, so that was your tipping point.
That was when, no, I mean, it was one of them. You know, I had already kind of like dealt with like a lot of issues in San Francisco. Like I moved back to San Francisco for like 2-3 months over the holidays last year. Mm-hmm. Or like 2 months. Who's that? Is that the cat?
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
But like, I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know I was depressed till I went home, basically.
Or, ooh, okay.
I didn't know. Like, I was just in LA just doing shit and, you know, drinking and doing drugs and playing video games and, you know, not applying myself. And nobody could get through to me. And then I was just like, you know what? I hadn't seen my parents in over a year. And this was a time in like, since I met you probably, since like 7-8 years that I've spent more than like a week. What the hell was that? What? Is that a fucking crow? Is that a baby?
Yo, no. My cat, she's insane.
Oh, she's yelling?
Man's attention.
Can she hear me?
No. No. She's like, bro, what are you doing over there? Anyway, that was the first time. So after not seeing your family for a year.
Yeah, like I was just at home. And yeah. I wasn't thinking about me. I was just applying myself to them. Anything they wanted. You want to go to a grocery store? Let's go. You want to go to your work? Let's go. What do you need? I bought them like washer dryer. I bought them like, I literally like try to just apply them. And that helped me just realize that I've been living just complete depression for the last like, because
it's about to be me next week in San Diego.
have that revelation, because it's crazy.
I've been mad depressed, bro. I've had dark days here, especially in this no sunshine and all this shit. It's like,
it really hurts. Wow. Like really like to your heart's content. You know what I mean? You can't explore anything else, because that's what allows you to get you out of your head, you know?
Yeah.
My friend, like, people think he's crazy because he, you know, all the conspiracy theories, but he thinks that it's a fucking attack on, like, emotional well-being, like, this whole thing, you know?
And I mean,
it's to keep people, you know, separated and not, you know, and like, I can't rule that out. You know, it might not be the whole answer to the problem, but like,
right. Like there's never one answer.
There never is. But like, to bring it back to parents, and like, to that was probably like that a big catalyst in allowing me to just kind of re-envision what it means to be in quarantine, what it means to be, you know what I mean? What, like, I have friends that became millionaires during quarantine, you know, like I have friends that like literally like use this quarantine and just, you know, finish some of their best work in their life, you know.
Amazing.
People have found like a positive spin. Like I know guys that became dads because they would never see their kids before. Mm. You know what I mean? All of a sudden they're with their kids every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've known people that like reconnecting with parts of their life that were slowly just deteriorating and getting lost to,
right.
To just, we were all headed for a fucking crazy work overload.
We're sleepwalking.
We were sleepwalking. We were. I was sleepwalking. I was collecting money left and right. Sleepwalking, dude.
Yeah, like, man.
It was, and like, I don't know. There, people do say that there's a massive silver lining in this whole thing, in that stopping and just, you know, reinventing what it means to be alive. Kind of, you know, that's how long I've been thinking about this shit.
No, that's super, super honest and super powerful.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to Current Mood on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and Anchor and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Also, join us on Instagram for some super cool visuals at currentmood.io. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And if you really feel like reaching out, send a message. Tell us what you are feeling, please.